to give us some perspective on what it is we're doing here, why. So the subject I want to talk about this afternoon is disturbance. Disturbance. Which, when I say the word, sounds like a good title for a Hollywood movie. Apocalypse. Disturbance. But I think it's something that, in a deep sense, we feel a large part of our life. We feel that life is too much for us. We feel that we need quiet. We need to stop. We need to get off the wheel. We feel like mice or rats in a cage on the wheel going round. We feel we need to stop. We need to get off this life. We need to have some calm. We need to have some peace. We need to have inner peace. We need to have outer peace. So we go on holiday, or we go on retreat, and we, in the search for inner peace. And very often it doesn't really work. We go on holiday and we find we argue with people and things are too expensive, and we still don't find this peace. And we go on retreat also looking for some calm, for some peace, and then we find that we meet another kind of disturbance, not the outer disturbance, not the noise of Tel Aviv, but the noise in our own mind. And we meet discomfort, and we meet irritation, and things are not the way we thought they might be. And it's crowded, and it's hot, and I didn't sleep well at night, and there's voices in my mind all the time, and there is a story of a traditional story of a monk that went off by himself and said, I'm going to be alone. And the Buddha said, okay, so you go off by yourself. And the monk went off and came back quite a long time later and said, it was wonderful to be alone. I know now how to be calm and quiet and on my own. And the Buddha said, well, how was it actually when you were on your own there? And he said, well, I was thinking of my cousin and my uncles and my aunt and my children and my grandparents. And the Buddha, what, you were alone? Is that what it means to be alone? You weren't alone. So we carry with us disturbance from the outside, and the inside are really one thing. There really isn't a difference. We run away from disturbance outside, but actually the same disturbance is happening to us on the inside as well. So it's a much more complicated story. It's not so simple that we want to go to the top of a mountain and feel the peace. A retreat is a place to stop. It's clear that what we're doing is breaking the habit of doing, breaking the habit of rushing into activity. We're breaking the habit, the compulsion, the dachaf, the compulsion to keep acting, to keep manifesting ourselves, to keep changing things. We are breaking that. And in some way we reduce the stimulation. And it's very good for us to reduce the stimulation. It's much more difficult if we had a retreat in the middle of Dizengoff. So it is helpful, especially at the beginning, to reduce stimulation coming in. Because it's hard enough to deal with what's inside anyway, without adding to it all the outside disturbance. But if we imagine that a retreat is the place to stop all disturbance outside and inside, then we've got a slightly wrong view of what a retreat is about. Because a retreat is not the same as anesthesia, hardama. A retreat is not about switching off. I know you may have read or heard about meditation as a kind of a trance in which you enter a space. Maybe you have, there are stories about someone that had a cup of tea. They're almost folk tales. Had a cup of tea, entered the trance, maybe 10 years later, came up and woke up and said, "Well, where's that cup of tea?" We're not here for that. We're not here to totally reduce the stimulation or the disturbance. We're not here to switch off. We're not here to take anesthetic. That's not the purpose. That's just adding another level of control or manipulation on our life. We're here for something else. We're here to understand more deeply what it is that disturbs us, what it is that makes us lose our peace. We're here to understand what is the peace that we're looking for. What is going on in our life that creates this disturbance? What are the messages that we're getting all the time, and how we relate to them? How we receive them? Why do they disturb us? Why does the blood in my body not disturb me, but the thoughts do disturb me? They're both part of life. The blood is flowing and the thoughts are flowing. Why the blood doesn't disturb me, but the thoughts do disturb me? And the questions that we need to ask: what is it that's going on that make me feel not deeply at ease? Once I was at a retreat in America, and right next to the meditation hall there was a JCB, a tractor, a machperon, enormous machperon that was digging a ditch next to the meditation hall, making a huge noise. And there was a 40 or 50 people in the room trying somehow to meditate. And this noise was going on and on and on. And at the end, someone asked the monk who was leading, he said, "I read that the Buddha once said that a human being can become awake, wake up, become liberated through the sound of the leaves. Is that true from also from the sound of a tractor?" And the monk thought about it for a moment and said, "You know, I have to say yes." So here is something which is very easy for us to see it on the outside. The most disturbing thing we can imagine, and even that, when we look carefully at what it is that's disturbing, it may not be so clear. Even that can be a tool for our understanding. So we need to look at this more carefully. Why is it that a tractor will disturb us and the birds will not disturb us? What is it going on in the relationship between inside and outside? I mean, imagine yourself relaxing, deep relaxation, and the phone rings. Okay? Disturbance from the outside. And then what do? You think, "Oh, I should have taken out the phone. Oh, it's probably not for me anyway. Oh, it's somebody wants to. Somebody wants somebody else. Oh, the phone is always ringing." What's happened? You are disturbing yourself. The phone rang, and stopped ringing, you're continuing with the disturbance. You're no longer relaxed. You're busy with the phone that was. So the inside and the outside are not different. We take the disturbance in. And it's a big question. We are part of life. How is it that life is disturbing us? What's happened? The life here is being disturbed by the life there. Is there disturbance in life? Is life against itself? How is it the life in here is being disturbed by the life outside? How is it the life of my thoughts is disturbing me? My life? What's going on? If we look at this more carefully, we begin to see that it's a definition that we have more or less decided through a process of experience, of conditioning, of defenses, haganot, that they're things that disturb us. It's a process of, in the process of living, we build protections, we build distinction. This is, a bird is fine, and a tractor is not fine. A sensation of the body, of the heart, and of the breathing is fine. A thing called thinking is a problem. We build distinctions. We build this good, this not, this fine, this disturbing, and this is nice. This is calm, and that's not calm. It's us. We do it. So we have to examine the tendency in us to sort life, to say this is good, this is bad, this is this, this is that. We have to examine it. And if we do that, in many ways we find it's not the sound that disturbs us, it's we that disturb the sound. The tractor's just doing its thing. We put things on it. The thoughts are just doing their thing. We made the thoughts trouble for ourselves. So in a way we disturb the thoughts. Thoughts don't disturb us. We selected, we decided thoughts are not calm. We decided that. So our journey here in this retreat is a journey to begin to understand what it is that we do with ourselves, what it is that we do with our life. I know that at the beginning, especially to those of you that this is the first time that you've entered a retreat, at the beginning our task is really just to slow down, just to become a little bit more centered, a little bit more stable, a little bit more calm and steady. We sit, we connect with the breath. We are quiet. We feel ourselves sitting, we feel our life a little bit more. This is a process of calming down. It's really important, it's good for us to calm down a bit. But the process that we're going to be going through together is not just a process of calming down, it's a process of awakening. It's a process of understanding ourselves. It's a process of beginning to transform, to change something in us, to understand ourselves. And one question which is going to come up even now to many of us is, I feel uncomfortable. It's not good for me. My body hurts. I'm tired. I feel crowded. I feel this, I feel that, disturbance. In other words, the disturbance is for us a message. It's not a problem. It carries a message, and it's our teacher. We may not at this time be able to understand and listen to it to the end, but it's our teacher. It's an opportunity, not a problem. And slowly through the retreat, we're going to be developing tools to be able to listen to the messages that we're getting, to listen with a more sensitive, more awake, more sympathetic inner ear to the messages of our life. What are the messages coming up for us? The clearest message may be, I'm being disturbed. That's just the one on the surface. It's the first one that appears to us. The pain in the back, or I'm hot or cold. That's the first one. That's just the message that we're getting that's clear and strong at this moment. Fine. That's what's happening. That's the message. Slowly, slowly, if we open our world, we will listen to more and more messages. We will understand them more deeply. We'll be able to hold these messages to see our life. This is a process of awakening. This is why we're here. We're not here just to calm down. We're here to wake up. Many of you may know this story of the Buddha, which is told again and again, but I think it's a very important story. Someone met him in the street, and he was shining. And so they asked him, "Who are you? Are you a god? Are you an angel? Are you a prince?" He said, "No, I'm not a god. I'm not an angel. I'm not a prince. I'm just awake. I woke up." It's in our capacity to be awake. And the way we do it is by, first of all, centering ourselves, connecting ourselves to life, and then opening ourselves to all these messages. There was once I read a scientific study of Zen monks, and the researchers put wires on the brain of the Zen monk and banged a bell next to his ear. Every time the bell was banged, the brain waves went thuck, like this. The strange thing was, if this happens to ordinary people, after about five noises, the mind gets used to the noise and doesn't react anymore. So there's a peak in the brain wave, goes up, goes up, goes up, and then, well, I know this, this is not threatening, this is not a problem, I don't need to pay attention, and the mind switches off and doesn't react. With the Zen master, 100 times the bell was rang, and the reaction of the mind on the 100th time was exactly the same as the reaction at the first time. In other words, there was a sensitivity, that's in a small way an awakening. A sensitivity not to switch off, not to select the world, what's good, what's disturbing, I want to get rid of, not to be in the usual track of switching off, but to be awake, to be sensitive. I remember once, actually a couple of days ago, my wife told me a story about my eldest daughter when we were in England, and she used to go every week to the post office, Hadoa, with the baby here, in order to get the money from the state. And the post office in England, they have a lot of stamps. They have, hotamot, because they're bang, 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 maybe 10, 12 times. So the pakid, the clerk, was doing this, bang, bang. And the baby, inside, is going like this, every time. And she was amazed that the baby didn't stop doing that, and she, every time the clerk went bang, the baby went like that, and just kept on doing that. And it didn't matter. It wasn't a problem for the baby to react. It wasn't a problem. We didn't have to have total quiet. There was a sense of openness to the reality. I remember once, we were on a walk, a peace walk, and there was about 50, 70 people on the walk, and we entered a place which was a kind of holiday center for Arab children in the Galilee. And in this place there was lots of music, lots of kids laughing, lots of shouting, And there was a little corner of demonstration of how to make olive oil from olives, and a little corner of some other cultural thing, and a lot of music and noise. And we entered this. This was meant to be, we were walking in silence. And several people came to me and said, "This is a terribly noisy place. How can we be here? We shouldn't be here. We're meant to be quiet." And I said, "But look, look at the children. They're so happy. When did you last see Arab kids so joyful, so free, so happy, so many Arab kids together, free? Isn't that amazing?" So it's another view. We're not here just to be quiet, to calm, to settle down. We're here to be awake to life, awake to the special things in life, awake to the things in us that give us joy, awake to what it is that made us decide something is disturbing, something is difficult. So, what it is that we, how is it that we do this? What's the way that we do this in this retreat? There is a story about a man that comes to an ocean. At first he doesn't know what it is. He just sees a big sea, a big ocean. He doesn't know what it is. He looks at it and then he begins to see there's very big waves there, and he's frightened from going in. The waves are disturbance. The waves are the difficulty. The waves are the things that we don't like. The waves are the problem. So he's got a choice. He either waits until the waves calm down and the ocean is still. And it's possible to be waiting a long time. Or he says, "Okay, I'm going to go in. I'm going to go under the waves. I'm going to let another wave go over me. It may be difficult, but I'm going to go under the wave." And he goes under the waves. The next one comes. He goes under that one. The next one comes. And he goes under that one. And soon he's swimming in the ocean. No fear. End of problem. The waves come, but he's swimming in a very big ocean. And it's a little bit like that with us. At the beginning of the retreat, at the beginning of our practice, the waves do feel big. They feel solid. We're disturbed by this. This is difficult for us. This is a problem for us. This is a beautiful thing, but this is a problem for us. And slowly, slowly, as we learn to swim, the waves come, and we have a different relationship to the waves. The big story for us is that when we learn to swim in the ocean, never mind the waves, it's that that we take out with us after the retreat. It's that that we bring into our life. It's that that makes us able to stand in our life and receive whatever comes, whether it's health or sickness, whether it's disturbing or joyful. We are fully there with all of the waves. And we're not busy with running from disturbance and looking for what's good for us. What happens is there's a sense of a larger space. We're more there with our life. We're more present. The present itself has got bigger for us. And it can contain the waves. It's not that we want to make life better by sorting it out, by just looking for the calm, by having another holiday, another holiday, another holiday. It doesn't work. The way that we awake is to become a larger mind, a larger presence, which can contain the waves. And they're not so bad. They're just us that have decided this wave is difficult, this wave is painful, this is good, this is not so good. So we can become a bigger mind that can take our life bit by bit at each wave as it comes and contain it and be there with it. I want to quote Achan Cha, one of the great teachers of the 20th century, And a Thai, if you like, the head of the Thai world of Buddhist practice in the 20th century, the leading figure. And once he said, don't be a meditator. Don't be a vipassana meditator. When you breathe, let it be. When you walk, let it be. When you sit, let it be. There's this beautiful movement there of letting things be. Letting things be themselves. But in order to let things be, you need to be with them. You need to know that they're there. To let something be, it's an act of containing or knowing them. It's an act of being big enough in your mind to let things be. Let life be itself. So slowly, slowly, step by step, in the course of this few days together, we're practicing to receive our experience with a slightly bigger mind, with a slightly bigger heart. We're learning to let things be. That's the journey, and it's the journey of awakening. So we'll take a few minutes of silence together.